Don't be surprised by the latest changes to your commute. Get traffic and weather together every 10 minutes on the 8s on 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. Now back on 107.7 FM.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Delighted to have you with us here on a Wednesday after Steven Strasburg's debut as a Washington. I think anybody who's a baseball fan, whatever city you live in, I think last night you were a Nat. You know, it's just a storybook game. Dorothy Ruminski and Amatucci is in there cheering about it, too. But a great day for baseball. Great day for Washington. Got a really good show coming up today. Going to be speaking with Dan Adcock. He is the legislative director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and he's one of the veteran people on the Capitol Hill, one of the lobbyists that know how things work and how all things Fed. And then coming up at 10:30, we'll be speaking with Randy Irwin from the National Federation of Federal Employees. So we're going to cover the waterfront from pay raises and retiree COLAs to family leave bill to a proposal to cut back federal hiring. So we're going to cover it all. Dan, are you with us?
Mike, good morning.
Hey, morning. Thank you for being here. Were you up watching the game last night?
No, unfortunately, I missed it.
Okay, Tom Timmon here said he was there. He's very, very proud of that fact. It's a moment in history. When we were negotiating about coming on the show, one of the things that came up was the pay raise, the pay freeze for federal workers that was proposed some weeks back. And what happened with that? And how do you think you guys managed to stop it?
Well, right before the Congress went into the Memorial Day recess, there was two attempts, both on the House and the Senate. In the Senate, there was an amendment offered by Senators Coburn from Oklahoma and McCain from Arizona to basically deny federal employees the modest 1.4% pay raise that the president has proposed for 2011. And by a fairly narrow vote, the motion to table the amendment was passed, so that that passed by a margin of 53-45, which is much closer than we would have liked. But, you know, our organization, as well as others in the federal and postal community, you know, called on the Senate to vote against it, and luckily we prevailed. Then the next day, on the 28th of May, there was an attempt by Congresswoman Bachman from Minnesota to essentially offer the same amendment, and that too was tabled by a motion offered by Congressman Ike Skelton, and that motion was approved by a 227-183 margin. So again, a little closer than we would like, but you know, we're pleased that at least in this instance that the federal community prevailed. But I don't. This is not the last we've heard on this, and we know from statements that supporters of this type of amendment have made that they'll be back trying to attach this to other must-pass legislation.
Right. Well, you know, we try to run no hype radio here and not make it sound any worse than it is. But this is a case, as you said, 53-45 vote is a lot closer than you would have liked. And also the fact that the president has told federal agencies to reduce spending by 5%. And that could, it seems to me, with an election coming up, there could be a new buildup later on this summer for a federal pay freeze that I think would be very popular outside of the federal community.
Yeah, that is the problem. I mean, I think, you know, when you have a bad economy and the political anti-Washington political situation that we have today, that it makes, you know, federal employees and retirees the whipping boy. So that's the uphill battle we fight. But, you know, one thing you mentioned that I just want to point to is that, you know, I think it's ironic that on one hand, the administration wants federal workers to try to make the government more efficient and try to come up with these reductions, and certainly they're capable of doing that. They know better than anybody else, you know, what works and what doesn't. So, you know, that's, you know, from our perspective, that's a legitimate request that the administration is working of federal workers, and they're certainly well equipped to accomplish that task. But it seems counterproductive at the very same time to undercut those same people that are capable of finding those deficiencies in the federal government and eliminating them by going ahead and cutting their salary for the coming year.
Right, and it should be clear that the Obama administration, the president himself, have proposed a federal pay raise.
That's right.
It's members of Congress, certain members of Congress, that are talking about a pay freeze,
right.
Or even at one point somebody was talking about a pay cut, which would present all kinds of problems. Now, okay, so federal white-collar workers are looking at unless somebody derails it, a raise of 1.4% in January of 2011, and that
right.
would be subject probably to locality pay, so it could be slightly more in an area like Washington, less or the same in other parts of the country. What about the retiree COLA? Because so many people, I know the media is guilty of this, and the Congress too, they refer to all pay raises as cost of living adjustments or inflation adjustments, but as you well know, pay raises are a political budgetary consideration, and the retiree COLAs are based on inflation. The rate of inflation is measured by the BLS through the Consumer Price Index. How's that looking?
Well, and I think you're right. Even within the federal community, I think there's some confusion about the federal employee pay raise versus the COLA for annuities. The blessing and the curse of this situation is you're right. And for federal workers, the process of how much the pay raise will be is fought out annually in the appropriations process. And on the retiree side, it's done automatically through current law that whatever the consumer price index is, as determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that sets what the COLA will be for the coming year. The problem is that as we look at what the index is at this point, we're on a path towards another no COLA year, just like 2010 for 2011, which, you know, obviously creates a lot of huge problems for not only federal workers, but also to Social Security beneficiaries and military retirees who also depend on that COLA. But a unique, what's something that's a very unique feature that affects not just some federal retirees, but also state and local government retirees, is that in no COLA years, if you're a Social Security beneficiary, you are protected from increases in the Medicare Part B premium. But if you don't receive Social Security because you didn't work under Social Security covered employment, and certainly we have a lot of people in the civil service retirement system who fall under that category, and that's also true of a lot of state and local government employees, they don't have that protection. So they have to pay the increase in the Part B premium, and they have to pay an extra amount that subsidizes the protection that all other retirees receive from being held harmless from that premium increase.
That's amazing, and that's a relatively small group compared to the ones who are exempt from that price increase.
That's right. For federal retirees, we're talking somewhere between 200,000 to 300,000 retirees who are affected by it, and then there's probably another 700,000 amongst the state and local government employee community that's affected on their end.
So I think I understand this, but the way it is now, if in a year where there's no COLA, as mm-hmm. happened in 2010, January 2010, there was no inflation adjustment, so the Medicare Part B premiums did not go up for people who are covered by Social Security, but they did go up for people who, like the CSRS retirees from the government, who are not covered by Social Security.
That's right.
What's the difference, Dan? Do you know that?
There's a huge difference. If memory serves me, the premiums between 2009 to 2010 stayed at approximately $96 a month for those folks who were protected. But for those who weren't, if I remember correctly, the premiums went up to $110 a month. So that's a significant spike for those folks, you know, especially when they're not getting any COLA. And, you know, despite, you know, some areas where, you know, prices have stayed steady or gone down, there's still a lot of expenses, and of course, you know, seniors bear a disproportionate share of healthcare costs, and
sure.
certainly those are not going down; they're going up.
Is there any realistic hope that these are 200,000 or 300,000 feds under Social Security who are paying the higher premiums will somehow be exempted from it, like others under Social Security? I mean, a realistic hope.
Well, we would like to think so. I mean, last year there was an attempt to do exactly that in legislation that passed the House last September, but unfortunately ran into a snag in the Senate. It also protected other individuals who are also not protected. There's three other groups. There's people who have their Medicare Part B premium means tested. There's individuals who are low-income people who are low-income seniors that are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid. And then there's people who are new to the Medicaid Medicare program. And so all those four groups were protected in the bill. And unfortunately, because we ran into a roadblock in the Senate, the legislation didn't move any further. And so, you know, at this point, we're stuck with the premium increase for 2010. But, you know, we have time at this point to try to get something moving into, you know, before 2011 so that we can get all our ducks in a row and try to get at least some modicum of protection for government retirees.
It's interesting. We've had steady COLAs since the inception of the inflation catch-up program. And in 2009, I believe it was 5.8% was the cost of living adjustment.
Right.
And then to go the next year to zero and the following year to zero, it's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. But what surprises me is the relatively few numbers of emails that I've gotten from retirees who are desperate about this and angry. I mean, some are, and some truly say it's a hardship, but others say, you know, wish I got it, COLA, but I appreciate the fact that inflation is, or actually we're in periods of deflation from time to time, and they seem to be willing to go along with it.
Well, I mean, I think that it's good that people have that perspective on it, but on our end of it, you know, from what we're getting a lot of traffic in the form of emails and calls to our offices here for people who are facing this increase in the Medicare Part B premium in 2010. So it's really raised the noise level on it, at least as far as NARF goes, has been pretty high. And so that's why, you know, we're going to be working with key members of Congress in the months to come to try to get some kind of protection passed. And we're also going to be working with our coalition partners, not only with other federal and postal organizations, but also with organizations that represent state and local government workers.
Dan, we got to take a break here, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you about depositing unused annual leave into the Thrift Savings Plan. We'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
If you're an IT professional looking to advance your career, it's anything but a game. Which is why UMBC is the only university in Maryland to offer graduate programs in human-centered computing, where students apply principles from human-computer interaction, behavioral sciences, and design. UMBC also offers graduate programs in information systems, including an online master's in IS. Get the credential that makes a difference and put some muscle back into your resume. Find out more at is.umbc.edu today.
Well, you know, Facebook has been having somewhat of a problem because they're just sharing your data with everybody. Mm-hmm. Deactivation is not the same as deletion.
The information is still out there.
And what
right? They
try to do is they try to urge you to deactivate, and they try to keep you away from that nasty deletion page. You see, deactivation simply turns off your account, but does not remove the data. The idea behind deactivation is that someday you'll be back.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention, CIOs. There's a cyberspace battle going on.
The threat is everywhere.
And you may be losing.
You should be afraid. Very afraid.
The only way to solve your cybersecurity threat is our way.
Everybody's selling cybersecurity these days. It's all about fear and drama. At HP, we believe cybersecurity isn't about fear. It's about managing threats while still achieving your mission objectives. For us, cybersecurity means actively managing risks and costs, and enhancing the freedom of action of your organization. Every day, HP helps our government and commercial clients securely achieve their missions with speed, precision, and confidence.
In cyberspace, no one can hear you scream.
Take the fear out of cyber threats and enable your organization to thrive in an uncertain environment. Visit HP at hp.com/go/cybersecurity. Outcomes that matter. Copyright 2010 Hewlett-Packard Development Company, LP.
Here's David McClure, Associate Administrator of the Office of Citizen Services and Communications, GSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
A cloud environment is an application-rich environment. I think we're going to see the rejuvenation of applications in the technology area. We have been so heavily focused on technology, we're now able to focus on information and data.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle, from the battle space to the White House. SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Wednesday edition of the Dorabeck Insider. So many agencies, you're looking to find the innovators. What if there was something like a Peace Corps, but for programmers? This creative idea from Matthew Burton. We're going to talk to him about it, flesh it out a little bit. And agencies working on competitions like Apps for the Army, GSA, working on a platform to help you carry them out legally and easily. We'll get details. All that and much more this afternoon on the Dorabeck Insider, 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Dan Adcock. He is the Legislative Director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. And Dan, since you added that active some years ago, how are you doing picking up people before they retire as members?
We're steadily picking them up. They're steadily becoming a greater percentage of our membership. I mean, obviously, the bulk of our membership continues to be retirees, but, you know, over time, we're picking up a greater percentage of active federal employees.
Well, I would think increasingly because of things, the various retirement issues and COLA and things like that, that people who think that they're someday going to retire from the government, it would behoove them to get in now. My mother was a NARF member for many, many years, and I think she actually joined before she left the government. Talking about before the break about depositing unused annual leave into the Thrift Savings Plan when you leave government or when you retire, where is that idea?
Well, the story with that proposal is that the Obama administration proposed this for private sector 401ks, which are essentially the same thing as the Thrift Savings Plan in the federal government. One of the things that we've always tried to do, and I think the rest of the federal community as well, is that whenever some new feature is added to 401k plans in the private sector, that the same there should be equity for federal workers in the Thrift Savings Plan. And so what this proposal does is that if you have unused leave, it allows you to take that unused leave and rather than cash it out, put it into your Thrift Savings Plan. And so legislation, H.R. 4865, has passed the full Oversight and Government Reform Committee in April, and, you know, it's something we'd like to get to the House floor because, again, it just would bring parity between the public and private sectors, and it's just another way to encourage federal workers to save for their retirement through their thrift savings plan.
Right, and you're not talking about a huge amount of money here because some people in the upper grades in the SES can have more than 240 hours of leave in some instances, and that can be a big chunk of change. But in most cases, they wouldn't be able to deposit all of it because you still have these IRS limits of, I believe, 16.5 and 5,500 or something like that.
Right, that's right. They would still run up against those limits, but of course, you know, not everybody's in the position to max out those limits.
Correct,
and so
yeah.
This would be another way, you know, yet another way to be able to maximize the amount of savings that you have going into your retirement.
Well, it struck me as a little bit ironic and unfair that one of the objections to this, to extending this to federal and postal workers, is that it would delay the revenue stream going to the IRS. That is, the money, instead of being taxed in the year they got it or the year after they got it, it would be tax deferred as long as
right.
It was in their TSP. But again, you're not talking about a whole lot of money, and the tax implications are much broader for the private sector, where there are a lot more people in 401k plans, and yet the White House is endorsing it. So I don't see where the opposition could come from.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. Well, and the other part is that if, you know, as we know from the tobacco regulatory bill that passed last year that includes that we're going to be offering a Roth option to the thrift savings plan, that means that in theory people could take after-tax money out of, you know, out of, in this situation where you're allowed to put your unused leave into the TSP, pay taxes on it now, and then the IRS would get that revenue.
Right. Dan, we just got a few minutes left here, but you mentioned when we were talking about the oversight of prescription drug pricing in the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. What does that mean?
Well, I think for a long time, you know, a lot of our members have heard stories in the press about the prescription drug pricing, the negotiation that goes on by insurance carriers, that there's sometimes there are court cases, especially by state attorney generals in a number of states across the country, where these pharmaceutical benefit managers that are third parties that negotiate drug prices for insurance companies, that they're not necessarily passing on the discounts that they receive through bulk buying those prescription drugs to the plans and specifically to the enrollees in those plans. And in fact, back in February, the House Federal Workforce Subcommittee held a hearing on this where the Office of the Inspector General of the Office of Personnel Management, Patrick McFarlane, testified that the cost structures of the FEHBP PBMs are utterly non-transparent. As a result, there is no objective basis to determine whether the terms being offered to an FEHBP carrier by a pharmaceutical benefit manager represents an advantageous arrangement. And so, you know, from our perspective, we want to make sure that the Inspector General has the tools that they need to ensure that federal employees and retirees, as well as taxpayers, are getting the best deal from these pharmaceutical benefit managers that are going out and negotiating these drug prices.
Well, the FEHBP, the Federal Health Program, is, I guess it's the biggest company plan in the U.S. It covers about 9 million people, virtually everybody in government, spouses, dependents in some cases. And you would think with that large a constituency, with that many people who are automatically having their insurance premiums deducted every 2 weeks or every month, as the case may be, you'd think that they would be able to negotiate some of the best drug prices in the country. Is that the case?
Well, I think we would like to think so, and we, you know, in the past we've sung the praises of the pharmaceutical benefit managers. I mean, you know, I think overall they've done a good job and enabled these plans to get better, especially for the larger plans in the program, to use the economy scale they have to negotiate these drug prices from pharmaceutical manufacturers. It just, I think the uneasiness that a lot of our members feel is what happens behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to pierce that curtain and just to make sure that everything's on the up and up and that people have the peace of mind of knowing that they are getting the best deal and that the pharmaceutical benefit managers are acting in the best interests of the plans, of the taxpayers and the enrollees.
Great. Dan, thank you very much for being this. Dan Adcock, Legislative Director of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with Randy Irwin about pay and NSPS and a variety of things. So we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
Checking your daily TSP ticker, the latest numbers from June 8th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.30. F Fund is unchanged at $13.91. The C Fund rises 0.14 at $12.69. The S Fund is up 0.03 at $16.58. And the I Fund rises 0.19 at $15.74. Your L Funds are higher. The 2040 rises 0.12 at $14.95. The 2030 is up 0.10 at $14.90. The 2020 up 0.09 at $14.89. The 2010 gains 0.03 at $15.23. And the L income rises 0.03 at $13.90. Check your rates anytime, every day on FederalNewsRadio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the Secure Communities Program? How is U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement transforming how it identifies and removes criminal aliens from the U.S.? What about its efforts to improve information sharing with its law enforcement partners? The Business of Government Hour will explore these questions and more with David Venturella, Executive Director, Secure Communities Program within the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Don Adcock is the new director of the Army's Information Technology Agency. He wants to be on the cutting edge when it comes to technology.
I'm looking to find a single entity within the agency that's sole charter and mission in life will be innovation. So over the next 6 to 12 months, I'll be looking to create an innovation entity here in ITA that helps us understand innovation, how to bring it into the agency, and what do we do with it once we have it here.
Data is exploding in growth, usage, and retention. Count on it, and count on Vion to manage your organization through that change. Vion's file service solutions allow you to manage all platforms with an integrated management approach. This enables you to consolidate, protect, search, and archive unstructured data. With powerful technology partners like Hitachi Data Systems, Vion will help you regain control of your IT environment. To learn more about Vion's file services, visit Vion.com. That's Vion.com.
It's the only program of its kind in the world, a unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning, designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. Offered by one of the country's leading business schools, according to a ranking by U.S. News & World Report. To learn more, visit som.gmu.edu/defense or call 703-993-4457. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is June 20th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. Do it for yourself. Do it for your country.
Is there a heroine in technology in your company or branch of government? If so, the March of Dimes would like you to nominate her for the 10th annual Heroines in Technology Awards. Heroines in Technology recognizes women who exemplify outstanding volunteer service to our community. Nominees will be considered from all segments of the tech industry. To nominate a heroine, please visit marchofdimes.com/metrodc or call 703-824-0111 extension 21. The nomination deadline is August 1st.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm going to be talking with Randy Irwin of the National Federation of Federal Employees. And remind you here, if you can't hear the entire show or can't hear any of it, we are archived on our homepage, so you can pick them up and listen anytime. And when you have people of the caliber of Dan Adcock and Randy Irwin, who know so much about how Capitol Hill really works, it's an education, and I commend the show to you. Randy, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mike.
Got a bunch of things to talk about today, and maybe we could start out with the National Security Personnel System. I believe I sent you a blind copy without the man's name of a lengthy email from a guy with the Navy, and he's talking about, he's one of these people in the National Security Personnel System who is being, well, they're all being recycled back into the GS system. He was he did very well under NSPS, and he's making more money than he would have had he remained in the GS system. What they're telling these people now is you can come back and keep your salary, keep it under saved pay, but that in the future you will only get 50%, half of the raise that goes to the GS people until your salary sort of catches up with everybody else in it. He raises a couple of interesting points. He says he wonders if it's legal, and of course saved pay is legal. It is under law, so that's legal. But he's talking about the way the raises were given out. In some cases, they were bonuses. They were shares, I think he referred to them. And some people got them in the form of a bonus. Some got them in the form of pay. And most took pay, obviously, because it impacts their retirement later on. But did he have a case in this?
I don't think he does. I think the important thing is that these folks are getting some form of pay retention. I really feel for the folks that got moved under MSPS and were kind of made promises that the government couldn't really follow through on. So I do sympathize with them. But these folks are doing better off, you know, than they would have if they had never gone under NSPS in the first place. I mean, if you compare them with other agencies, those folks never got that temporary bump where they were, you know, for a year they were making 8.6% increases. I mean, that was an unsustainable kind of a thing. But at least they're getting pay retention, and they'll retain that little increase, you know, for in some cases for a few more years.
Well, you know, this is a classic case, and a lot of people the famous phrase, they can't do that. Well, if it's Congress, they can do that. Mm-hmm. And the Congress went along with the NSPS, which was a creature of the Bush administration, mm-hmm. and then under a Democratic president, Democratic Congress, they have in effect repealed it and said, recycle them back, 226,000 people. The feedback that I'm mostly getting from people is the sum in the NSPS, the one guy, my poster boy, if you will, he said he's a GS 14 step 15, meaning he's making about $8,000-$9,000 more than he would have if he were just in a regular GS job. But he said, I got mine, I got it early, it's going to help my retirement, and even though I don't like the idea of getting half pay raises for the foreseeable future, he sort of backs up what you said, that he got his up front.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, as you say, probably isn't any legal grounds for challenging this. Point number two, you said you wanted to talk about this bill that would, I think it's H.R. 5348, I believe you sent me, and this is one that would allow agencies to hire only one employee for every two that retire. They've tried things like this before, you know, the one for two kind of thing. What's it all about, and what are the chances?
You know, I think that just federal employment, be it be federal employees' individual pay or how many federal employees happen to be on the rolls at this point, people are just really coming after the federal government in general. And to be honest, I think it's politically driven. I mean, everybody knows that we have a sizable budget deficit. Something needs to be done about it. But just politically, it works for some people to come after the federal employees. I don't think it's justified, you know, when coming after federal employees' pay. To me, the only statistic that matters is that on average, federal employees make 26% less than private sectors working doing the same jobs. And everything else is politics. Yet people are, you know, just in the last couple weeks, we've fought efforts in both the House and Senate to freeze or substantially reduce federal employees' pay. And to me, all of that is politically driven.
Yeah. Randy, hold that thought, because I want to ask you about this, where it's coming from, if we know. I'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
The network is the backbone of a productive government agency. As wireless networks take the place of in-facility wireline for cost efficiencies, Motorola's secure wireless local area networks help government agencies lower cost and increase productivity. Meeting FIPS 140-2 validation for security, Motorola's wireless solutions reliably transmit voice, data, and video day in and day out. When you need secure communications, think Motorola. Visit Motorola.com/mobilegov.
The Internet. It's indispensable. Without it, how else would we perform crucial functions like shoe shopping, watching videos of a cat playing the piano, emailing inspirational anecdotes to our 1,000 closest friends. But despite these awesome utilizations of information technology at Kaiser Permanente, we found some better uses, like being able to securely manage your own health online 24/7, emailing your doctor's office, checking most test results, reviewing meds, making routine appointments, not to mention a vital digital connection between you, your doctor, and everyone on your team. Could it be that making total health smarter, more efficient, and more convenient is the very sort of thing for which the internet was intended? Maybe, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't fit in a cat video now and then. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we want you to live well, laugh well, and thrive. Learn more at kp.org/thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 20101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Randy Irwin with the National Federation of Federal Employees. And Randy, now NFFE for many, many years was independent, mm-hmm. but now you guys are an AFL-CIO affiliate, correct?
That's true. We affiliated with the Machinists Union, who are part of the AFL-CIO, back in 1998, and we've been part of the AFL ever since.
Gives you a little more clout with organized labor, obviously.
It does, and it's really increased our coordination with all the other unions, mm-hmm. some of the big private sector unions in particular. And we've created this Federal Workers Alliance, where we got 22 federal unions who are kind of all working in collaboration on federal employee issues. And I think we've had a lot of success in doing that.
That's good. Now, you were talking before with the break about this campaign against federal workers, and some of it is understandable because the economy is terrible, mm-hmm. the jobs picture is awful. If you deduct the temporary census workers that were hired in showing up in the last jobs report, recovery is very low. State and local governments are firing people right mm-hmm. and left or furloughing them. So you can understand why people look with envy at the federal civilian workforce. Mm-hmm. That said, and I know this, I know how it works in the media because I am a creature of it, but the media tends to follow. Somebody jumps on a story. It's not always a plot as such or somebody masterminding it, but somebody comes up with a good story, that one that, as they say, that has mm-hmm. legs, and that would be the USA Today and the Wall Street Journal saying that federal workers are overpaid any way you look at it, and mm-hmm. they had some examples. Then the Washington Times had a similar story, but from a different viewpoint. And these things... They take on a life of their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're popular people. It fits in with what they believe. What I thought was ironic was with the Federal Pay Comparability Act of, I think, 1990, this was a bipartisan thing. President George H.W. Bush, George Bush the first, signed the bill into law. It was a creature of the Democratic Congress, mm-hmm. and the idea was that starting in 1993 with the next president, federal workers would get raises each year that would not catch up totally, but that they would bring them close to comparability with their counterparts in the private sector. And it had provisions for locality and all of that thing. And it looked like a done deal, just like the National Security Personnel System. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, the first president who's asked to implement it, Bill Clinton, looked at the numbers and said, this is wrong. I think many federal workers here were making more than he made as governor of Arkansas. And he said, we're not going to do this until we have total compensation considered. That is the value of federal pay and fringe benefits. And, of course, that didn't happen. He proposed a zero raise. Congress went around him and gave federal workers something. And that was the pattern all through the Clinton years and all through the George Bush years. Proposed little or nothing for feds, not pay any attention to the BLS data, and then Congress would, in all but two of those years, then did an end run. The bottom line is what you just said earlier, is that you believe that federal pay is around 26% below the level in the private sector. Mm-hmm. And convincing the public of this is an uphill job, huh?
Well, in these economic times, it is. You know, some people are just determined to say that federal employees are overpaid regardless of what the statistics say. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has been calculating the federal pay gap, you know, which now stands at 26%, bigger than it was considerably bigger than it was during Clinton. They've been calculating it the exact same way for decades, and even during Republican administrations, nobody ever successfully argued that federal employees are overpaid, because it's just not true. You can see it in our ability to recruit and retain and maintain employees. We see case after case of people getting experience in the federal sector and then moving on to where they can get paid more in the private sector. You know, I mean, that hasn't changed. The main thing that's changed is that the unemployment rate has gone up. So, I mean, I will grant you that for the people, I mean, we're comparing people working in the federal sector with people working in the private sector and matching up. Yes, we're paid more. Now, we're only looking at people who have jobs. So for the other 10% of unemployment, those people aren't factored in. But, for a lot of federal jobs, These are, you know, take a lot of skill, a lot of education.
Well, yeah, I think it's true that the government does not operate Walmart kind of operations.
Exactly.
It doesn't do
exactly.
does the government doesn't do retail by and
exactly.
large.
Most of our work, you just cannot insert worker.
Right.
They spend a lot of money recruiting and retaining and finding people who have the skills to do the jobs in government.
Right. I mean, NASA. You can go on and on. And look at the
right.
places. So they really are comparing apples and oranges. Randy, Dan Adcock earlier said that we're talking about the relatively close vote in the Senate to freeze federal pay, and he said it was a lot closer than they would have liked, and similarly it was close in the House. With the 5% spending cut that the president has directed to federal agencies, with all of this feds are overpaid stuff in the news media, would you be surprised if they don't come at this again later in Congress?
To be honest, I think that there will be efforts throughout this year. I don't think that we've seen the end of the efforts to try to freeze or reduce federal pay. But you know, that's just my guess.
Well, I mean, that seems the kind of thing to me. You know, this is a radio station and a website, and we're aimed at federal workers, contractors, members of the federal family.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be excused if we see things differently. But out there beyond the Beltway, outside of people who work for the federal government, I would think a federal pay freeze, indeed a federal pay cut, would be popular with the majority of voters.
You know, I think it's what's important is how you phrase that question. Would they want to see a federal, you know, let's cut bureaucrats' salaries?
Yeah.
Sure. You know, but when they see the cut in services that go with that, I think you get, you know, a very, very different response. I mean, the federal government is caring for our veterans, preparing our Department of Defense, you know, for conducting these operations we have. You know, very, very important thing. So when they see that it really means cuts in services, you know, I don't think you'll get the same kind of response.
What about the president's proposal for them to cut spending 5%? Can that be comfortably done without resulting in these service cuts you're talking about?
Well, you know, I think that the president's got to look at what different. You know, federal functions are what programs are working and what aren't. You know, I mean, as unions, I think we're in a little bit of a job, and we have a job of responding to those things. But hey, we 100% understand that cuts need to be made someplace. But I think the important thing is to you know, as they say, use a scalpel instead of a hatchet. I mean, ideas of you know, just not hiring people as folks retire in the federal sector. I mean, that is just damaging kind of idea. It's really not really understanding the way government works to even think that an option like that is going to, you know, work. So, I mean, the Obama administration has a job to do, but that's not the answer.
Well, Congress has always had such a split personality. The administration has said it's going to be their practice to bring jobs that were contracted out during both the Bush and the Clinton administrations, bring those back into government, get them under government control, and they are going to have to staff up, beef up a number of federal agencies because they have expanded roles in Homeland Security and national security overseas. In managing the financial thing, the U.S. government now in effect owns General Motors, or did, so they're going to have to bring a lot of people into the government. And the idea that somebody in Congress would introduce a bill saying you can only replace one of every two that retire, it just seems to me somebody's not on board the plan here.
Yeah, I agree. The only reason that civilian federal employment has increased is that the Obama administration is bringing some of the work that was improperly contracted out, and then some of the new things that they're doing, but mainly work that has been improperly contracted out under the previous administration. Work that was inherently governmental was contracted out, also work that was very closely related to inherently governmental, so things like contractors that are overseeing other contractors, contractors that were preparing budgets, developing policies, interpreting regulations. These are like really fundamental government functions that we're now shopping out to the private sector.
Well, and
it's just inappropriate.
We've got to take a break here, Randy. But to be fair, a lot of this contracting out occurred during the Clinton administration with that massive downsizing and the jobs they deemed as overhead that are now being brought back in. But we'll be right back here on WFED 1500 AM.
If you've been around Washington as long as I have, you know the one constant is change. The players change, laws change. If you're a federal retiree or soon to be one, you need to know that some of those changes could affect your retirement future. There's one association fighting to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. If you work for or have worked for Uncle Sam, you need NARF. NARF is the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. Or call them at 800-627-3394, 800-627-3394, and have them send you more information.
The Ability One program creates jobs for people who are blind or have significant disabilities without cost to taxpaying citizens. People like Ronald at Travis Air Force Base.
My job makes me feel proud. I'm serving my country and also helping others that I work with.
Nearly 70% of people with significant disabilities are without jobs. That number may not surprise you unless you know that these individuals are willing and able to work. Find out more at AbilityOne.org.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
Announcing Executive Update 2010, the Senior Executives Association, in affiliation with Deloitte Federal Human Capital Practice, invites you to join your peers in government June 16th in Washington, D.C. for Executive Update 2010. Sessions focus on the administration's performance expectations for executives, labor management forums, OPM Director John Barry's vision for the Career Executive Corps, Norm Ornstein's congressional election predictions, and much more. For additional information and to register, visit seniorexecutives.org.
How do you keep your infrastructure safe without limiting your people and productivity? CA Technologies let you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems. Can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you enforce defense in detail, not just defense in depth? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems? With CA Technologies, you can. To learn how, visit ca.com/security.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. Got a couple of minutes left with Randy Irwin. He is Legislative Director of the National Federation of Federal Employees and affiliate of the Machinist Union, the AFL-CIO. Randy, before the show, we were talking about this paid parental leave bill, and I think there are a lot of people who are interested in it. There are a lot of people, probably like myself, who don't fully understand it. Can you explain what it is and where it is and where it's likely to go?
Yeah, basically this is a bill that would provide 4 weeks of paid leave for federal employees who have a child or adopt a child. It would apply to both the male and the female. And, you know, right now we're one of only a handful of countries in the world that don't offer a paid leave benefit for families that have children. And, you know, this bill is long overdue, and it's already passed the House. And so, you know, we're hoping to get movement in the Senate, and maybe, you know, we might need some kind of a legislative vehicle to attach the bill to. But this one's long overdue, and it's important that we get it done soon.
So if you were a husband and wife, well, obviously you're a husband and wife team, but if you both work for the government, you could both take off for that 4-week period and be paid?
That's true. Right now under the Family Medical Leave Act, you can take up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave, and you can use your annual leave or sick leave in that time. The problem is for a lot of the average age of a federal employee, of a new federal employee is in the low 30s. So a lot of the folks who come into government and are still of, you know, childbearing age haven't accrued enough leave to give themselves any kind of a cushion. So for a lot of federal employees that have a child or adopt, they're forced to choose between taking unpaid leave or just, you know, delaying, starting a family in the first place.
Are there objections to this bill? And if so, what are they and who's making them?
There's a statement of administration policy from the White House in support of it. The House has already passed it. So mainly, you know, it's problems in the Senate. And I think the main thing is, there is a cost to it. It does, you know, have a kind of a budget score. Just in general, you've got, you know, budget hawks that say, oh, no new benefits to federal employees. They're doing good enough already. And I think that those are the only folks who have gotten real traction. Those are the folks who'd be against it.
Because you do have to have that pay-go rule up on the Hill, correct?
Yeah, I mean, just everything going through, and you know, this is not necessarily a bad thing, but I mean, they want pay-fors for everything going through Congress right now. I mean, one important thing about you know, this particular bill is that this really kind of it costs a lot to replace federal employees. It costs more to recruit a new federal employee to replace somebody that leaves than it does to just give somebody leave. 4 weeks of paid leave in the first place.
Yeah. Okay.
So you know, if you're able to maintain, you know, keep the federal employees that are already here and not have to incur the expense of you know, sometimes it's, you know, $30,000 or $40,000 to go and find somebody and pay for them to move and fill a position. If you can save on those costs just by, you know, giving somebody, you know, a little paid leave.
Good.
Which almost every other country in the world
makes
has.
Sense. Randy, thank you very much for being with us today. And a reminder, all these shows are archived, so if you missed all or some or part of it, or if you want to tell a friend about it, we're archived on our webpage, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good week.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for data center, security, and unified communication strategy and solutions.
Plane's fueled. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate? A plane ready for takeoff?
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog now.
Which push-to-talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Plus, now get push-to-talk in the BlackBerry Tour smartphone. Buy one today for $99.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Here's Colonel Kevin Foster, Office of the Secretary of Defense, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
For DOD to have a cloud computer.